It is very difficult to speak after my esteemed colleague, Rabbi Schachter, who I see is leaving the room, and I wish you a Freilich and Chanukah. I want to just get that in public, after we wished in private. Our families go back many, many years, thank God. It's a privilege to speak right after him. And my topic, maybe more controversial than his, Chanukah, a clash of cultures then and now, and my primary source, which you all have in front of you, I hope, is the Sefer Ner Mitzvah of the Maharal Miprag. The Maharal Miprag needs no introduction, one of the seminal thinkers of our people. I will be adding to his words primarily from what we'll call the critical edition of the Ner Mitzvah. Here it is in front of you in blue. The editor is Rabbi Yeshua Hartman, who's put out many of our Maharal Svarim, and as a matter of fact, most of his footnotes refer to additional Svarim written by the Maharal. This was written, put out 11 years ago by Machon Yerushalayim. Let us turn our attention immediately to the thrust of today's presentation, which is, what does the Greek civilization represent? The Maharal begins by telling us that the Greek society believed in Chochmah, believed in wisdom. Rabbi Hartman points out, by quoting the Rambam in Mor Nevuchim, not only did they believe in wisdom, but their wisdom was in point of fact accurate. Rambam says that Aristotle was correct in all that he presented with respect to nature. But precisely because of their penchant for wisdom, they tried to uproot our wisdom. Skip to line 7 of the first bullet. L'kach ha-malchus ha-zos lo hayu misnagdim li-yisrael rak mitzad ha-torah ha-sichlis u-mitzvas ha-torah ha-elokis. Because they were a civilized and intellectual society, their attempt was to destroy our wisdom. V'kach ha-yakolin in-malchus ha-shlishis, the third of the four kingdoms, Yavon. Levatal mi Yisrael malas haTorah elokis, and therefore they said, quoting Bereshis Rabba, Hamalchus Shlishis Yavan Omeres Yisrael Kisu al Keren Hashor. The Medrash says in its completeness, V'choshech al Pnei Sahom. This is Yavan, Greece is darkness, and they have told us, right on a Keren Hashor, which represents the Egel, Ein lechem chelek b'Elokei Yisrael. This is the beginning of the second bullet. But before getting there, Maral earlier quotes a Medrash Rabba and Eicha. The Pasuk, Bagoyim Ein Torah. If someone tells you Chochma Bagoyim, that the nations of the world have wisdom, tamin, believe it. Torah Bagoyim, that they have Torah, al tamin, do not believe it. And again, quoting the Rambam, Aristotle and the Greeks were correct with respect to the natural world, but not with respect to the supernatural. And it's for this very reason that they insisted on translating the Torah into Greek. And this translation has halachic significance. The Greek language, as Rashi and Megillah Daftes, was the nicest language of the time. But this very closeness of Greece in comparison to the people of Israel and the Torah, led them to attempt to destroy us. As the Maharal writes, a chacham is miskane b'chacham. A wise man is jealous of another wise man. Since the Greeks were wise, they were jealous of our wisdom. And their attempt was to say, again in paragraph 2, line 5, She'asu ha'egel v'achet zeh davar atzmi lehem lo dvar mikra. They attempted to prove that the sin of the eagle was something intrinsic, an intrinsic shortcoming of the people of Israel, but not v'lo dvar mikra, and therefore we have no chelik v'elokei Yisrael. Indeed, had it been so, it would have been the case. In point of fact, however, it was not so. It was only a momentary lapse. To go skip, to he quotes Yeshaya Memtes, V'anochi lo ashkachech, Hashem will never forget us because we made a momentary lapse. It's not intrinsically a shortcoming in us. Again, they wanted to destroy what's unique about us, our godliness. They tried to destroy our Torah. It is in contrast to the Malchus and Revius, the Romans. They wanted to kill us. They wanted to destroy us physically. As he said, that was their intention. But the Yevonim, no. They said, Ein lechem chelek bo yizbarach. Rakilanu hu amal alokis. You see what's happening here? They claim that they're the ones who have godliness and their understanding of what it means. But their understanding is limited to what they can perceive, as we shall see momentarily. This is found in the introduction of the Maharal to the four kingdoms. Now, let us turn our attention to part two of the Maharal, which is in Yonei Chanukah proper. Let's start from the beginning and read a little bit of the text inside. V'hisboyer, ki malchus yavon hu muchon lisnaget liyisroel b'mashiyesh lem Torah mitzvus alokis. Ki el malchus zu shayach la'achochma shiksecha la'odam bilvad. They are very smart in terms of human wisdom, but not Sechel Eloki HaNivdol, which is Torah. That is godly. Therefore, they are very opposed to the Beis HaMikdash in the Torah, because these are the highest levels. Go together, Shibana Beis HaMikdash, Hussein Chalkeinu B'Sorah Sechel, and therefore they oppose the Torah. And specifically, they also opposed, as we well know, the Beis HaMikdash. Okay. It goes on to explain that the Greeks were able, unfortunately, to defile all of the oil in the Heichal. It's very important to understand some of the construction of the Beis HaMikdash. The Heichal was called the Kodesh, but further in was the Kodesh HaKadoshim. The Kodesh HaKadoshim housed only the Aron HaKodesh, which had in it the Luchos, and as we shall see in the second Beis HaMikdash, when the Luchos were no longer, when the Aron was no longer there, it was Nignaz. It was not taken into captivity. Rather, it was downstairs, still there, deep under the place which was the Kodesh HaKadoshim. And the Greeks, as we well know, were able to overcome destroying and defiling all the oil which was found in this Heichal. Paragraph 2 on page 2. Here it's called page 3, including the cover page.
The
Yosef Mikol Umos. The Heichal represented wisdom. In the Heichal was, for example, the menorah. We all know the menorah is in the Heichal. The similar davar, Heichal Ola L'Mesporo Samachay. This is typical of Maral Gematria. Heichal is 65. And Yavan is 66. This teaches us that somehow Yavan was able to go over ala Heichal. B'tamim es Heichal. Koach Yavan was greater. And therefore they defiled all the oil in the Heichal. Why oil? Because oil is miyuchad l'kedusha. That's what we use to sanctify all the articles in the Beis HaMikdash. So far, therefore, we seem to be in pretty bad shape. But as we well know, the Gemara tells us one jug, one flask of oil remained untouched by the Greeks. What does this represent? It is still sealed with the seal of the Kohen Gadol. Explains the Maharal Prague. What does this mean? He quotes Shabbos Chaf Aleph Amud Beis on line 6 of this paragraph. Ki Kohen Gadol yesh lo kedusha al kedusha. Kohen Gadol, a higher level of sanctity. Ki Kohen Gadol nichnas lifnai v'lifnim l'kodesh ha-kadoshim kedusha al kedusha. A higher level, and on this level, in other words, if you take the Heichal unto itself, with the menorah, with the seven candles, with all the oil that's there, the Greeks, with their wisdom, can overcome. But the Heichal contains within it a level of sanctity, which is, if you will, exported from the innermost sanctum, from the Kodesh HaKadoshim. And this the Greeks were unable to touch. And he explains why. Tells us that the Heichal had seven candles, and the number seven represents nature. This is found in the next paragraph. We'll come back a little bit later. The next paragraph, in which he writes, Hanhogos olam ateva utachas mispro zayin. Line 4 of the next paragraph. Paragraph 3. Ki bizayin yamim nivra ha'olam hazeh ativi. Nature is represented, the Maharal says in many places, by the number 7. The number 7 is what we can see, experience with our own senses. This is explained by the Ramban in Vayikra Perek Tazayin Pasuk Ches. And in his Drasha Torah Hashem Temima, that Aristotle believed only what he can apprehend, what he can see and feel. He didn't believe in any wisdom beyond him, beyond his understanding. And as a matter of fact, the footnote points out that Yavan is the same gematria as Galgal, which the Rambam uses in his Mora Nevuchim. Whatever is tachas al-galgal, the natural world, the Greeks understood very well. And galgal, he adds, is from the shorash of galui, what's revealed. But the kodesh ha-kodoshim, the innermost sanctum, is beyond that. It's in a higher level. A higher level. Not only that, the kedusha ha-kedusha of the kodesh ha-kodoshim had an impact in the Heichal itself. There were neighbors, remember. And he quotes in one of the footnotes something which I once spoke about at Shul and a Shabbos Shuvah Drasha many years ago from Reb Chaim of Brisk, who explained the part of this service which we fulfill on Yom Kippur in the Heichal, on the Paroches, really relates fundamentally to the innermost sanctum, to the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So these two adjacent rooms were connected to one another. And the Kodesh Kadoshim aspect of the Heichal itself was beyond the reach of the Greeks. And that one flask, Munach B'chosoma Shel Kohen Gadol, represented the aspect of our sanctity that the Greeks were unable to touch. The number 8, supernatural. Back to paragraph 3. Lama Kodesh Kadosh Amach HaShiva Ki Anhogas Olam HaTeva Tachas Mitzvah Zayin. Rules created in 7 days. 8 is beyond nature. Where do you find this? And the essence of what distinguishes between the Greeks and the Jewish culture in the word Heichel. We go back to paragraph 2. A remarkable insight, the second half of the paragraph. He says, they only were able to overcome what's visible, what they could see. But also parkotan b'chosomo uvehester shel kohen gadol. He adds a word. Not only his sign was on it, but it was something which represents the hidden. Where do you find that in the Heichal? Look at the words of the Maharal. Ki ba'os ha-hei shel Heichal sheyesh bo hatzeire yesh yud nocha. The yud is silent. Nelemes, hidden. Uhu mora al mala al yona nisteres, being hidden, sheyesh behechol, which is the malas kodesh hakadoshim. Uvazeh lo sholtu hayavonim. Because it's hidden. Kodesh kadoshim nister v'nelem behechol. Couldn't find it. And the Greeks couldn't find it either. Only the Kohen could go in. The Kohen, with his gematria, is Heichel, plus an additional Yud. The Yud which represents the Kodesh Kadoshim. Number 75 is Kohen. And that's why the Pach was Chosama Shel Kohen Gadol. Only the Kohen Gadol could go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. And the Yud tells us the highest level of Kedusha. And the Yud, which is silent, is Kedusha Ne'lemes Nisteres Kodesh HaKadoshim, which the Greeks could not possibly find. The Greeks, everything was let it all hang out. Let it all be up front and center. Whatever we can see, we'll enjoy, that's what we stand for. But what they were unable to overcome was the secret weapon, if you will, that we have. That which is hidden. The Yud in the Heichal, representing the silence. That which is in fact hidden. If I may add myself, you take away the Yud from Heichel, you're left with Hakol. It's everything. Everything is revealed except for the Yud. The Yud which represents the Kodesh HaKadoshim, which is hidden, which is secret. This is what the people of Israel, what the Torah, what the supernatural stands for. And the Greeks, who were able to conquer everything which is natural, were unable to touch this level of the supernatural. It's interesting, if one looks a little bit further in the words of the Maharal Prague, he explains as follows. Last paragraph on page 3. V'davar zeh ramzu chachamim b'medrash b'zos yavo aron al hakodesh. That means the Kodesh Kadoshim and Yom Kippur, the Kohen Gadol. B'zchus hamila zos b'risi asher tishmeru Nichnas Aaron al Hakodesh. What does that mean? Kilo hayaror leben adam chomri. A physical person should not be appropriate for him to go. Lichnos al makom shu kodesh kadoshim. Nivdal min agashmi achomri. Because this was completely separated from the natural world, the what he calls the physical, the thick world. Unless he has a mila, shu al hateva gamke. Why? Because Mila is on the 8th day. The Medrash also says, Maral quotes it elsewhere, B'schus Torah, which was given also after 7 weeks. The Torah is represented by the number 8. Whatever is supernatural, this is what is necessary for the Kohen Gadol to enter into the Kodesh HaKodesh. Very, very important. If we go to the last page, we'll see the climax of this part of the Maral Prague. Again, Vatorah Nitna Gamken Lachar Zayin, Shiva Shavuos, 7. And he quotes, the Heichal had the menorah, which is 7, which is natural. Kodesh Kadoshim had the Torah and the Orah, which is the Or Atzma. A candle is the physical item which gives forth light. But in the Kodesh Kadoshim was the light itself. Oron Milashon Or. That's the Shminis. And therefore the Nes of 8 days of Chanukah. The number 8 is the magic number for Mila, for Chanukah, for Torah. This represents beyond nature, beyond the natural world. These are the ideas of the Maharal Prague. We went over it quite quickly. It requires really a much more careful analysis, and even the parts that were not printed here, I recommend that you look it over. If you have a chance to get this beautiful new edition, it'll be very, very helpful. Let us expand upon the words of the Maharal Prague and try to then bring it down to our own day and age. Some history. I grew up in Kew Gardens Hills. Anybody from that part of the world? Okay. And when I was in high school about 50 years ago, Rabbi Schoenfeld, Shalita, asked me to be the rabbi for the youth Shabbos. It was Pasha's Beshalach. My father, Zichron Levracha, gave me a drasha to say. Rabbi Schoenfeld was so impressed by my drasha when I was in high school, he said, "You're going to be a rabbi one day." Famous last words. And the drasha went as follows. Had to do with yesterday's parsha. We read it yesterday. Yesterday we read Yosef Atzadik, Vayonos Vayetze Yachutza. He left his garments in the hands of Eshes Potiphar, who tried to seduce him, and he ran outside. Chazal tell us in the Medrash that when the Kriyas Yamsah was about to happen, the sea refused to split. God said, "I'm a sea, I don't split." What convinced the sea to split? Arono shel Yosef. The coffin of Yosef. Based on what pasuk? We said it this morning. Hayom ra'a vayonos. Vayonos vayete hachutza. So write our rabbis in the Medrash. Sounds very strange. So the drasha 50 years ago went as follows. The Yam said, "I'm not going to change my nature. My nature is to be one body of water." But Yosef HaTzadik overcame his nature. The natural inclination of a 17-year-old far away from home, when it would be expedient to give in to the seduction of Eshes Potiphar, would have certainly done it. He was able to overcome his nature. Chazal say that the appearance of Yaakov Avinu in the windows would save him. Rashi quotes part of it in this, yesterday's parsha. He was able to rise up over his nature. So in the schus of Yosef, who went overcame his natural instincts, this is what split the sea to go against its nature. Now, let's go a little bit further. You know that we have a piyut, a poem written by no less than Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, one of the great thinkers of all time, well, together with the Maharal and with the Rambam and the Ramban, all the people who are quoting are the giants of Jewish thought. He wrote Yom Li'Abasha, which is said, at least in our shul, on the seventh day of Pesach, commemorating the Kriyas Yamsuf, as well, if you look on your bencher, at the Birchas, right before benching by Bris Milah. And indeed, both themes are echoed. The theme of Milah is found in Yom Li'Abasha. But then, something very interesting. There's one other mitzvah which is found, which seems to be a non sequitur. What does it do with it? And that is tzitzis. Tzitzis is found in the Yom Li'Abasha. Al kanfei kesuscho yasu gedilim, shira chadasha shibchuk ulim. What's tzitzis doing there? I believe the answer is based on the Gemara Masechta Menachos, which tells us but a particular individual who, like Yosef, was tempted to give in to his sin. At the last moment, he was saved by the tzitzis. Because tzitzis, you know, also have the number 8. And Rashi links tzitzis with Kriyas Yamsuf in the last comment in Parsha Shlach and the Parsha of Tzitzis. And he makes an incredible statement. Just, we have 8 tzitzis, 8 strings, because Kriyas Yamsuf took place on the 8th day. Not in my book, the 7th day. So they explain. Yeah, if you start from Erev Pesach, it's the 8th day. Well, then every day is the 8th day. It depends where you start. So Rashi rigged it to start an Erev Pesach because he wanted to establish this linkage between these two. This is Kriyas Yamsuf is supernatural, based on Yosef HaTzadik, overcame his nature. So too, the Tzitzis, 8, enables to overcome nature, and so to the Mila, as the Maharal Prague writes, the Rambam writes the same thing, The milah gives an individual the opportunity to try to overcome that particular aspect of human nature and not to succumb to sin. Let us turn our attention for the moment, after all these words of the Maral and my small addition, to what went on in the Greece of old. So if you look in the history books written by the experts, there was something there which is very, very dangerous. Let's remember, the Yetzirah for sin is as old as Gan Eden, as old as human beings, and has existed in all societies and will continue to exist forever. What was special about Greece? The historians, I'm talking about non-Jewish historians, writing about the Greek culture, say that what was different was it wasn't merely individual sins. There have always been individual sinners. But in Greece, it was state-sponsored. There were state-sponsored brothels in Greece. And, or it was institutionalized. It was a formal institution. It was an institution called mentoring, which exists within the cultural and intellectual elite, and it had a, forgive me, homosexual aspect to it. This is not just a particular individual committing a sin because he has lusts. This is a formal institution. This is a total disaster. I refer to the Sefer HaKedah, another seminal book of Jewish thought, written in the 15th century, by Yitzhak Arma. Pashas Vayera, talk about Sodom. There he writes that the problem with Sodom was that the sin became institutionalized. It was city-sponsored or city-state-sponsored in Sodom. This is the way we do things. We don't help people. We prohibit taking in guests. We're involved in all kinds of immoral acts, some of which are described in the Torah, Chumash, and Rashi, in Pashas Vayera. And he speaks there, believe it or not, that there were certain members of Am Yisrael who wanted to establish the types of activities that we had in Greece. And they met L'Shem Shammai, because they were unfortunate men who couldn't control themselves. And they were in violation of the Ten Commandments, adultery, which is much worse. And they felt we should establish different institutions for them to be able to satisfy their desires with women who were not married. And the Rebbe screamed, I yelled at them, Chas v'shalom, Cholila, this is stone. If an individual sins, that's his problem. He'll be punished. But if it's made into an official activity, it's paid for by community chest, which it was at one point in time. This Chas v'shalom. That's stone. That's the destruction of society as we know it. This is what happened in Greece. Unfortunately. And more unfortunately for us is that it's not merely a historical footnote. But I believe that the society in which we live is repeating the mistakes of Greece and of Sodom. Acts which existed, we call today now in the closet, have become legalized and sanctioned right here. We live in New York State and in New York City. Unfortunately, acts which always took place in shame and hiding, now the government recognizes them. And this is true not merely of the gay marriage that you all know about in recent times, but it's true fundamentally of the entire what I call postmodern world, which is that everything goes. Everything goes. Morality. No longer we pay lip service to it. There were always those who were sinners. No, we're not denying that. But at least formally, we adhered as a society to what used to be called the Judeo-Christian ethic. This mission is based on the Bible, which abhors adultery and homosexuality as toeva. This was what we officially adhere to as a society. Yes, there were always sinners. Today, unfortunately, there's been a terrible yurida. We've gone down. And perhaps the most unfortunate is that just as in Greece, our foes were not only Greeks, but also perhaps even more insidious and dangerous. We called them Misyavdim, not the Yavanim. Misyavdim were Jews, children of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, who embraced Hellenism with all that it stood for. And they were the ones who had spearheaded the battle against Torah and Israel. So too today. So many of the avant-garde who have spearheaded this campaign over the last two generations to legalize and moralize acts which until now were illegal and immoral are, we're ashamed to say it, from Achenu B'nai Yisrael. Because they've embraced the liberalism, the wisdom, the democracy of Yavan. But they have unfortunately cast aside the elevated Kedusha, the Me'al HaTeva, that the Torah and Am Yisrael represent. This is the challenge that we face, as the culture of Torah is not only opposed, as the title says, to the culture of the days of Hanukkah, a clash of cultures then, when it was the Greeks and the Hellenists who opposed Torah, but now as well, when both the general society at large, as well as some of the liberal Jewish society, has cast away the Torah, cast away the biblical ethic, and now believes in a whole, totally new way of thinking. And you know, I'm looking at the audience, there's some people who are older, some people who are younger. This is for those my age, can remember that the world wasn't always this way. The youngsters think, and I'm not blaming you, you were brought into this world. It was always this way in your experience. But it wasn't always this way. And they get some laughs and some smiles from the people from my generation. We think back to 50 years ago when I gave that drusha. The world was different. I grew up in a block in Kew Garden Hills. A very nice block. There was only one other front person on the block. There were Jews, there were non-Jews. But they all believed in family values. Can't tell what they did. They believed in family values. There were intact families with fathers and mothers and children. And they led that kind of a lifestyle. Certainly outwardly, it was clean. I'm the first to admit, I think it's important that we admit, we shouldn't hide over the facts, that I grew up with a television in my house. And I even looked at it. And we watch those programs and we look back with some measure of nostalgia, trying to think what they were. Father Knows Best. Before I was a father, but I knew even then that Father knew best. We even had I Love Lucy. Remember those programs? Did they have reruns of these things yet? They do. Okay. The Honeymooners, yeah. This was the entertainment that we experienced in those days, 50 years ago, approximately, probably even a little bit more by now. You know, it wasn't the Maharal Prague, and it wasn't the Gemara, it wasn't Chumash. It was entertainment, yes, but it was not something which was spiritually devastating. It was relatively clean. And people who feel that, you know, when I was in yeshiva, they yelled at us, TV, it's toeva. You have to get it out of the house. It was screaming and yelling, I had to bring home a note, all kinds of things that I remember in my youth. And we thought, you know, But you know what? That was the TV of then. Today, it really is toeva. From people who are experienced tell me that today, everything goes. Everything is exposed. Every possibility of immorality is right there in front of the most unsuspecting and young viewer. Whenever you can't get on TV, you can get an hour later on the computer. There's nothing that you can't get. Nothing. It's all out there polluting the souls of young and old. And what do we to do about it? Cannot compare today to what existed 50 years ago. Just can't do it. Unfortunately, these types of activities are rampant. We can't do today what we did then. I'm not a revisionist. I was around the world then. I saw what went on. In some parts of Orthodox society, there was mixed swimming and there was mixed dancing and the women didn't cover their hair. I'm not a revisionist. I was there. I saw it myself growing up in Kew Garden Hills. Moved there almost 55 years ago. I saw it. But there were good family values. And the children emulated the family values of their parents, by and large. Today, everything goes. Yes, I know it coincided with the pill, which came around 50 years ago, and led to the, quote, revolution, which unfortunately has weakened the morality, certainly on college campuses, as well as throughout the world. But it's more than that. It's more than that. We have adopted the Greek lifestyle, where everything that we do that's done physically in the world is now accepted. It's not something which a person has to be ashamed about. No matter what, you can do whatever you want. This has an impact trickle down on each and every one of us. And we have to discuss the unfortunate prevalence of these sins in our own midst and the unfortunate acceptance of these sins. That someone who was guilty of these sins, who used to be shunned, now is honored, Rahman al-Islam. I know of what I speak, unfortunately. Yes, even if the sins of adultery are not committed, there's too much disloyalty. Not just infidelity in the fullest sense, but too much divorce, let's be frank, much of which is because individuals tire of their spouses, are looking for some new excitement and thrill. Rahman al-Islam, we've seen too much of it. It's a epidemic in our society. It comes from the Goyim, from the Yavan, absolutely. But it trickles down even into Orthodox society. It's a terrible thing. Yes, I must say it. It's in our own homes. As I said, the TV is no longer what it used to be. And then there's the internet. With pornography as one of its greatest uses. And it is influenced and infiltrated into Torah homes. Individuals whose first name is Rabbi have unfortunately given in to this temptation. It always existed. You had to go out of your house somewhere and you were embarrassed to go there. Now it's right there in front of you. I've said already for years, in my opinion, there's an Isur Yichud with the internet. Same as shouldn't be secluded with a woman, shouldn't be secluded with an internet. It should be in public, in the main room of the house, if you can see what you're doing, with all the various filters and monitors, whatever you can possibly have to try to help you. We all know that today the internet's in your pocket. You can't have an Isur Yichud with your own pocket. That's a problem. And too many people have fallen in, little by little, into the web, the trap that is Yavan. It's impacted on the way we dress. flaunting tight clothes, parts that were always covered and now exposed, provocatively, even within circles of Orthodox Jews. Our values. What are our values? We're celebrating Hanukkah. There's the first day of Hanukkah. When I was in Eretz Yisrael, it's almost 50 years ago, there was an article in Ma'ariv by the famous writer named Schnitzer, I believe his name was, who wrote that the non-observant Israelis, who all celebrate Hanukkah, that's a national holiday, should think for themselves, which side would they be on? The side of the Matisyol or the side of the Misyavnim? In the absence of observance of Torah mitzvahs. And what are their values? Even in our own society, our Torah society, what are our values? We have to be so careful. These changes of values. Even within the Orthodox society. You know, the Greeks idolized the body, the Olympics, in the nude in those days. We grew up with sports, it's true. No doubt, we're all we're Yankee fans, we're even Dodger fans, so I can really date myself. But you know, it had its place. Today, in part of the Torah society, instead of having pictures of ancestors on your wall, or Gedolei Torah on the wall, there are sports stars on the wall. Or even worse, rock stars on the wall. You'll say, well, where in the 613 does it say I can't do that? It shows what you're idolizing, what you're thinking about, your set of values. This has an impact, which is very insidious. You have to be so careful about these things. When I was young, we went to the movies. Can't go anymore. I'm told that just about every one of them, I'm sure everyone has some exceptions, are just not fit for, certainly for men to be seeing. And let us remember that we have to contend with this phenomenon. We are not able to change society at large. And the question that becomes, with this I'll conclude, this clash of cultures, how do we deal with it? We are unable to change the culture of society at large. Let's be real. Can't do it. So what should we do? So there are different responses. In certain circles, the response is to run away. Who advocates this? So I'm going to quote some modern Haredi decisive? No. How about the Rambam? In the sixth paragraph of Hilchos Deos, which he writes that if the culture is corrupt, you have to leave. Believe me, whatever's going on now is worse than the Rambam's time. He said, run out of the cities, run to the caves. That's the famous Rambam. So there are those in today's world who do their best to run away from the modern culture because of what it stands for. Many of our brothers and sisters in the Hasidic community, in the, we'll call the Yeshivish community, they're doing their best to run away. And who can fault them? Just look around and see the terrible casualties that today's society has taken in our world. And they say, Mila Shem Elai, as Matisyahu said, the rallying cry of Hanukkah, away from the Greeks, away from the Hellenists, away from the trappings of today's culture, which run counter, diametrically opposed to what our Torah stands for. Sad fact is that even in those communities, you can't really run away. Only in very extreme, isolated pockets. And even there, we have things they didn't have. All the TVs and the internets and the smartphones that can come and go everywhere. There's a problem in these societies when individuals take advantage of these modern technological advances. Other parts of our society, it includes probably most of those sitting here in this room, have embraced to some extent some aspects of the modern world. Many, if not most of us, encounter it daily in the workplace. Let's remember, I'm speaking to you in English. In some parts of the society, I have to speak in Yiddish just to get away from society at large. I'm dressed here in a white shirt and a suit and a tie, what we call a Western dress. In some segments, they dress differently. Many have English names, which Rav Moshe, by the way, allows in today's world, but in other segments, they only have Hebrew or Yiddish names. And we can see that there are different approaches. We recognize the Shem Shemayim, there can be different approaches to how one encounters other cultures, how one deals with them. How much do you embrace, how much do you reject? And that's true. However, what must be clear is that fundamentally, this clash existed then and exists now. Now more so than 50 years ago. Now going back, the Torah has changed, but the outside society has changed and resembles Yavan, Greece much more now than it did then. This requires us to take particular measures, whatever the measures may be. I'm not here to go into particulars, what kinds of conferences on how to deal with internet just less than a year ago. And I don't know the answer. But I certainly know to recognize the problem. I've been called in too many times by marriages that were failing because of this. Again, first name is Rabbi. Too many things go wrong when the outside neo-Greek society permeates into our homes. Bali Musa explained that the Ner Chanukah is on the outside to keep the influences out. That was in the olden days. They had to come through the front door. Now, it's beamed in. The Chanukah Ner is not enough. You need much more than that. You need real Yiras Shamayim that Yosef HaTzadik demonstrated. Overcoming the natural desire, the natural curiosity of the human eye. Don't stray after your eyes, after your hearts, after what Greece has to offer. Remember, as wise and advanced as society is in our city and state, and it certainly is, the Rambam taught us that Aristotle knew all that was to be known in this world. He was even smarter relative to his time. And yet, he rejected everything that we stand for. He rejected the whole idea of a supernatural, of a light, of a Torah, of a Kodesh Kadoshim. He rejected it. And that's why the Greeks fought so strongly against the Torah. Lashkicham Torasecho La'avirah Mechukei Ritzonecho, as we say in the Al Hanisim. A concerted effort was made by the Greeks and by the Misyavdim, the Hellenists, to uproot our loyalty to Torah. In today's world, the effort may not be as coordinated, but perhaps even more powerful, because of those same devices that we described earlier. And therefore our battle, with its cry of Mila Shem Elai, must be even fiercer as we clash with our culture now as they did then. Let us remember, how will we be saved? We and our children and our grandchildren from this pernicious threat. It's only by recognizing the clash of cultures. Unfortunately, there are some, even those who keep the Torah mitzvahs, who reject the Maharal outright. They see no clash whatsoever between the wisdom of Greece then and America now with the wisdom of the Torah, and they're running to embrace it by the universities and the other intellectual centers, and they feel that nothing will befall us. This flies in the face of the facts. The reality is that both the academic centers and the other intellectual, even work centers, have claimed many casualties, falling into the Levavchem and Einechem, to the Greek values initially, and sometimes Chalil even to the Greek practices. And we are here on the first day of Hanukkah to remember what happened then and to apply it to the here and to the now. It's my bracha and the schus of our listening to these words of Chizuk, that each and every one of us and our children and our grandchildren will be spared from the very, very dangerous threat that hangs over our heads. In the schus of our rededication, which is what Chanukah is all about, may all of us be privileged to witness the ultimate rededication of the Beis HaMikdash, Yibaneh B'Mehera V'Yameinu Amen.